Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is terrific to have you here for another episode of the show. Now we are in for an absolute treat today. My guest today is Captain David Marquet, and David has been the captain of a US nuclear-powered submarine. And you can imagine that in the Navy, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on with hierarchy and leadership and all the rest of it. And David was able to radically transform that traditional leadership model in the submarine of which he was captain and take it from being the worst performing submarine in the fleet, the one that was joked about, the one that everyone kind of ridiculed, to becoming the best performing submarine in the fleet. But not only the best performing submarine in the fleet, one that is still spoken about over 10 years after he's left the service. And he did that in an environment that is steeped in tradition, steeped with historic ways of doing things, things where there's, you know, resistance to change. And what David was able to do was to introduce a model of leadership called the leader-leader model and move away from a leader-follower type of model. And what he did was he moved decision-making to the knowledge source. He did that in a very strategic way. He created the environment for that to occur. And of course, the results were spectacular. Now, David has helped many businesses adopt the same approach to leadership. And again, the results have been equally spectacular. He's the author of a couple of books. The first book is called Turn the Ship Around, and the second book is called Leadership is Language. I recommend both of them highly to you. Now, David is a fabulous guest. I honestly felt like I could have spoken to him for years. I mean, and being an ex-Navy guy like me, I really could understand the resistance he would have encountered to adopting this new leadership model. But the results, well, they speak for themselves. So if you want to build a business that is not reliant on you, where you don't have to be the person making every decision, every moment of every single day, where you can take a holiday and not have the phone ring, then you're going to need to have people that can think for themselves, people who can make good decisions and really entrust that capability with them and to them. And this conversation with David is going to be your gateway into that. Now, David is someone who's coming to speak to our boardroom group here at Savvy Dentist. We're really excited about that. I know our boardroom members are really looking forward to that because they're all about building an enterprise that operates without them. And of course, if you want to build a business that is going to operate without you and without you needing to be there, then I'm going to encourage you to come across to the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, because in that Facebook group, we're going to give you some tools, some training, some resources to help you go on that journey where you're creating a business that is initially profitable, then scalable, and ultimately valuable. And some tools and training and resources are going to be required to help you with that. And of course, that journey is predictable and sustainable if you do it right. And so I'm going to help you on that journey. So come across to the Savvy Dentist Facebook group. It's there for practice owners to come and get some free resources and tools and enter that conversation. So we look forward to seeing you there. But for now, let's get on to our conversation with David Marquet. I know you're going to want to write lots of notes around this, take it in, and I really hope you enjoy this. This is an absolute treat. Here's David. David Marquet, thank you so much for joining us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you here. I've been looking forward to this for ages. How's things in Florida?
Things are good. It's warming up and getting to spend lots of time in the water.
Fantastic. Well, David, I came across your work from a friend of mine and from your YouTube video. Your book, Turn the Ship Around, is one of my favorite books. I recommend it to anyone who listens about, you know, if anyone who wants to think about leadership, developing their own leadership, developing other leaders. There'll be some people listening to this podcast who are familiar with the book, and there'll be some people who are perhaps not as familiar with the book. But I thought, just for sake of context, could we just get a bit of a background on your time as the captain of a nuclear submarine, and really that story of going from Olympus to Santa Fe and what that meant and what happened as a consequence of that?
I joined the Navy in the 1970s, and I was this geeky, introverted kid at school. People kind of scared me. The military scared me. We were in the Cold War, and I wanted to do my part. But I read about submarines. The job of a submarine is to hide from people. So it was perfect for me. And when I went to submarine force, I always felt a bit like an outsider, a little bit of an odd duck. I kind of thought about things differently than it seemed like a lot of the other people. I was handed a book that said the definition of leadership is directing the thoughts, plans, and actions of others. Directing the thoughts, plans, and actions of others. And the dirty secret is I liked it. It appealed to me because it meant I got to use my brain, figure out the right thing to do and tell the team what to do. And then all day long, the team would come to me and say, hey, Lieutenant Marquet, hey, Commander Marquet, hey, Captain Marquet, I got a problem. What should I do? And then I would pontificate and give them the answer and almost, you know, and I was right more often than wrong. And so it just kind of reinforced this model that my job was to tell people what to do. And sure, when I was on the other side of things, I would sort of chafe at the, well, you know, hey, I have some ideas down here and no one really seemed all that interested. And that wasn't particularly satisfying, but because I was being promoted and rewarded on the strength of this model, I said, well, I'll just go with it. And you don't really question it after a while. It's just like, okay, that's the way it is. It's people, bosses tell the do the thinking and the deciding and the group does the doing. Anyway, I was selected to be a submarine commander. And at the very last, in the very last weeks of my training, which is a full year, they said, no, you're not going to the submarine you were scheduled to go to. You're going to go to the Santa Fe. And I literally fell down on my knees because the Santa Fe was the worst submarine in the fleet. She had the worst reputation. She had the worst morale. She provided the fleet with many lessons learned on how not to be. And during that year of training, we would get together periodically with the other submarine trainee captains and talk about how screwed up the Santa Fe was and then sort of laugh at their expense. Oh, thank God I'm not going to the Santa Fe. And the captain on the Santa Fe quit, and they said, Marquet, Santa Fe.
Oh, geez.
And the problem, all those other things, bad morale, bad performance, I had dealt with that. I was the guy in the Navy that they sent to those places that needed fixing on the strength of my ability to give good orders. So I show up at Santa Fe. The kicker was the Santa Fe was a different kind of submarine than I'd ever been on before. It was one of the newest submarines in the fleet.
Wow.
So here I show up and I'm looking at all this equipment. Now, of course, I know the theory of submarining.
Yes.
The physics, but I don't know the particular buttons, which I just spent 12 months learning for a different kind of submarine. And you walk in, you know it in your head. You know it in your head. You know, oh, I really need to be quiet more. I really need to listen to the crew. It's not a problem of knowing it. The problem is our habits are so deeply ingrained. Submarine captains give orders. I'm the senior person. They look at me. They want me to tell them what to do. They knew that I was trained for a different submarine. And fortunately, it fell apart very quickly. And it fell apart in a safe way. Mm-hmm. I gave an order that didn't make sense. The officer parroted it. It came to light very quickly. No one did anything. And it really kind of rocked me back on my heels. And I was the source of this order. It was to go to second gear in a motor that only had one gear. Like I said, it wasn't really in it of self significant other than the fact that my whole model of leadership that had been the source of my success for the last 15 years was proven to be an empty shell because there was no way for me to learn the submarine fast enough to give good orders. If your model is I give good orders and people do what they're told and you make a mistake, then where your head goes is, well, I just need to give better orders. I just need to be smarter. I just need to read the future better, things like that. But I couldn't learn a submarine fast enough. So
yeah.
I reframed the problem and my new reframe of the problem was, not that I gave a bad order. The problem is I was the one giving orders in a submarine where the crew, they were the worst performing crew, but they still fundamentally knew what to do. But they weren't being allowed to express it because we've heard it before. If you think what I'm telling you doesn't make sense, it's on you to speak up. Please let me know.
Yeah.
So I'll say, okay, go here, drive the submarine here, submerge this at 8 a.m, load these torpedoes. And oh, by the way, if any of that doesn't make sense, tell me.
Yeah.
We good? It doesn't work because all that sends a signal, don't buck the system. Don't tell the boss he or she's wrong. It's very socially inappropriate to do that. So the only way to do it is if you never tell them the bad orders first or good orders, doesn't matter. You can't tell them. You have to lean back. This leaning in is a bad idea. What you want to do is lean back and they lean into you, lean into your boss. And from that, so I made a decision never to give another order because that was going to lead us down a perilous path. And from that, all these amazing things, we had to figure out how to do it. And we had changed the language and we kept peeling the onion back, but amazing things happened. And it was just this magical time.
For those that have not yet read the book, and if you haven't read the book, firstly, go and grab a copy because it's an absolutely fantastic read. But the end result, of course, was the Santa Fe became the best performing submarine in the fleet, went on to win all the awards and accolades and so on as a result of this change in style of leadership. I'm a dentist from the Navy, so I'm aware of Navy culture and culture in military. We've always done it this way. Don't buck the system because this is what we've been doing for 100 years and so on and so forth. That must have taken a lot of energy, emphasis, drive to create that change. Obviously, you were doing that in an enclosed unit, which was the submarine. You're not trying to do that Navy-wide. How did that cultural shift occur in reality? What were some of the pitfalls? And of course, sometimes intellectually, we're looking at this from a leadership point of view, and the people listening to this podcast know that if they want to grow their business, they need to develop other people. They need to step back a little bit. Intellectually, everyone gets that. But as soon as something goes wrong, our natural instinct is to step in and take control again. And I know I've given you about 20 questions in one there, David, but I'm wondering if you can just speak to all of that in 30 seconds or less. Right? Sorry, Mike.
We only had two problems, me and them.
Yeah.
and it was really our programming. The biggest problem, of course, was me. Mm. How do I describe it? I had an intellectual notion and a commitment mm-hmm. that I was going to stop giving orders and lean back and not tell them what to do. And then, but then every time a guy came to me and said, well, I got this problem. What should I do? The answer would pop into my brain. Mm-hmm. And I had this visceral gut feeling that the right thing to do was to just tell them what to do so we could just move on with everything.
Yeah.
And over and over and over and over again, I had to suppress that gut feeling. And I'd have to that sounds like a hard problem. What are you going to do about that? But the key is to start with description. Too many times we think about this quote, empowerment is binary. Okay, well, no, I'm not going to tell you, you tell me. That's very binary. Mm-hmm. There's shades in there. So we say, I'm not going to tell you, hey, just tell me more about it. What's going on? Mm-hmm. What do you know about this that I don't know? What do you know that would surprise me? How do you see what's going on? It's description. Don't go to what do you think? Don't go to what should we do? Just get them to talk about how they see it. That should feel safe to them.
Yes.
Then you go to, okay, so let's make up an example from a dentist's office. One of the dentists is out unexpectedly or mm-hmm. has changed the holiday dates. And so now we have to go to the clients and the front desk people. Mm-hmm. And there's a question. Do you, mm-hmm. you can wait 2 months and get your normal dentist, or we can take you earlier, but you're going to get a different dentist. Let's just, from being on the other side of it, that's the kind of question I sometimes get from my dentist's office.
Yeah, sure.
So what you want as a dentist, you want to do dentistry. You don't want to do scheduling.
Yes.
You didn't go to dentist school so you could do scheduling. So you want to let the schedulers do this, but you have different clients, some are older, some are younger. And so you need your team to be able to have a conversation with the person that's real and give the person what they really want. We call this pushing the authority for making decisions to the person with the information, not the other way around. They may come to you and they say, well, Mr. Jones, I know he's been with you for 30 years. Da, 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 what do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. And you know the answer. 99%, you probably know the right thing to do, and you just have to eat it. You just have to say, well, what would you do? Well, if you were me, what would you do? Because otherwise, you're never getting out of that game. You're always going to be sucked into providing answers. If you ever want to sell your practice, if you ever want to go on vacation, if you ever want to do anything like that, you got to build other decision makers around you. One of the things I like to do now is every time I go to a restaurant, see if I get the server to choose my meal for me. And then put it in front of me without me knowing what they've chosen. Wow. That's the key. And I tell them, don't play it safe, because leadership is a practice. It's not a theory. Look, it's read it, wait, great. But if you don't go out there and practice saying different words to people, practice listening to something that you think is total nonsense, but in a way that conveys the sense that, well, maybe that could be true, because maybe it could be true. Then that's what you got to do as a leader. So we like this. It's practice. You go to the restaurant. Two things are going to happen if you're like me. Number one is you'll have some amount of anxiety over what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to give me a bunch of fried food. Oh, they're going to give me whatever. And if you have dietary restrictions, you've bound it. But that's the same thing you're going to do as a leader. Mm. And then number two is, in order to let that person feel safe making that decision for you, you have to connect with them as a human being. It won't work if you go to the server and you just say, "Oh, yeah, you just pick for me." They don't know you. Mm. They think you're going to give them a bad review. It's not going to work. That's exactly how it felt for me every day as a submarine commander. I mean, the decisions were different, but the emotional response is the same.
Yeah, obviously. And of course, you retained some of those. I think you retained one decision, which was to launch a weapon.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense. I want to come back to the connecting as a human being piece, because, you know, we're all human beings. It sounds, hey, we're born as a human being. We should innately be able to do that. It comes encoded in our operating system or our DNA and all the rest of it. And yet, some of us get that intuitively and others don't. And we can learn that skill, right? That's just a skill. That's a leadership skill. So in your environment, you know, how you created that connection, how you did do that with your crew, I imagine, again, you're walking onto the submarine. You've got four stripes on your shoulder. I'm assuming the ranking system's similar to ours, thereabouts. But you've got more stripes on your shoulder than they do. So how do you break down that authority, maintain a degree of authority, but create the human connection concurrently? And what's the balance between authority and connection without giving up that space?
Yeah, it's a hard problem. I think we instinctively want to connect as humans.
I believe so too.
But we're told not to. Work is the sort of sterile environment where we don't mix hierarchies. We don't fraternize with people two or three levels below that. Whether you're deliberately taught that or not, in the Navy you're deliberately taught
that in the Navy, for sure.
Yeah, but even if you're not, you quickly learn, oh, no, you don't. Like, if those guys invite you to a party, don't go, or just go for 5 minutes and say hi and then leave and then let them do their own thing. And I think it stems from the old industrial age model where bosses told workers what to do. And this is why we have a lot of language that reinforces this structure. White collar, blue collar workers, leaders, followers, decision makers, and people who execute the decision. And it's very binary. So in a sense, all you need to do is simply not suppress the human instinct to connect with people as human beings. My thing, I'll give you a couple of examples. When I was a big fan of a program which we call Chiefs in Charge. So this is like middle management. I was a big fan of giving them the authority to run their divisions. And when things didn't go well, So if I would have the chief, then I'd have a division officer, then I'd have a department head. Yep. I might have the chief of the boat, which is a senior enlisted guy, and I might have the second in command. So if I want to have a conversation with this one person, I've got six people in my stateroom. You can't have a conversation that's meaningful and honest when they've got all these other people around. So I wouldn't do that. I would just have a conversation with the one person.
Yep.
And I call it eyeball accountability. And we just talk to each other, man to man, human to human. And I would say, hey, what happened here? And mostly they would beat themselves up more than I would ever beat them up.
Yeah.
So I let the team down. And I cared about them. My secret was I didn't care about being myself. I didn't care about being promoted. I was a submarine commander. That's all I wanted.
Yeah. You tick that box. You'd achieve that already.
I'd achieve it. So I go to people all day long. What are you scared of? I talk to people, CEOs, they make $10 million a year and they act in this bizarre fear-based, well, I couldn't admit, I don't know that. Like, well, what are you afraid of? You make $10 million a year. And people are trapped by these weird fears that they have. So I just say, like, pretend you're already fired. And then that frees you from all this nonsense, or pretend you already retired, or pretend you've already sold the company and you're just there as to stay on afterwards and help. And I think that'll free you from a lot of the nonsense and the hangups we get embedded in us.
You've touched on a really interesting concept, David, and I had no intention of raising this today, but it's an interesting conversation. I feel like I'd talk for days, but it's almost like knowing what enough is. Your goal was to achieve command of a submarine. You achieved that goal. Everything else on top of that is gravy, right? What I wonder about with those CEOs and the fear-based activities, and maybe this is my own prejudice and biases coming through, is that sometimes I feel like we don't quite know when enough is. And there's always more, we're always chasing more. But the point I'm trying to make is I wonder with the CEO where they're kind of thinking about their next CEO role onto a bigger, better company. So I've got to do well as CEO in this company so I can get to the CEO of the top company. I don't know. I'm just wondering around that and whether that keeps people trapped in this cycle. Like we've got this concept called the hedonic treadmill where we're always wanting more. And I wonder if that keeps people trapped in that fear-based mentality is what I'm wondering out loud.
Yeah. I think that's largely true. To me, it's a little bit more complicated than that. I was very ambitious. Mm. I wanted the submarine to be the best. We were the worst. And I said, we were going to be the best submarine. People are going to be talking about Santa Fe 10 years from now. Yeah. And it was an obscenely ridiculous, like no one could believe it. It's like, nah. And I said, no, we are going to be the best. We're going to be the submarine people want to come to. I wanted to be better than the other submarines. And I wanted to be better in case we had to go to war. We're going to come back alive and we're going to put the bad guys on the bottom. Don't mistake this for some kind of acceptance of mediocrity.
Far from it. But what I'm saying is you're ambitious for others.
Yeah. So here's what I think. If I was standing on the deck about a year into it and I was standing in the control room and we had this big inspection coming up, and normally before the inspection, again, I would have been kind of self-focused. I would have been worried about, if we do bad, it's going to look bad for me. And I wouldn't necessarily have identified it as being a self-focus, but it would have been that. I would have been anxious. I've been worried about performance. I would have been performance focused, I guess. And on Santa Fe, I tried to change all that so that we were learning focused or growth focused. And I was like, it's going to be exciting. We're going to learn so much. And I let go of the performance side. I mean, after all, it's just a peacetime exercise, very intense multi-day peacetime exercise, but it was just a peacetime exercise. So I could let go of all that.
Yeah.
And the irony is once I let go of that and I let go of trying to tell my story all the time, I was way better than I would have been. And I had a lot less stress. I could just feel my heart rate was low and my breathing was deep and regular and slow. And I just felt at one and at ease in a way that I never felt in any of my previous jobs where I was just always anxious for performance. And I wish I could roll back the clock, like I think many of us, and I would have done so many things different. Yeah. I would have had this mentality, and then I would have been seeking feedback all the time. I would have been, yeah. Hey, how was that? What could I have done better? All the time. And I was afraid to do that so often.
What I wanted to briefly talk about in the time we got left, though, is about language, because you've spoken about that, and you've spoken about choosing words and so on. And you do have a book called Leadership is Language. I wanted to ask you, what do you mean by the fact that leadership is language?
The premise behind the book is, first of all, that leadership is about others, and the way humans interact with other people primarily is through language.
Yeah.
So leadership isn't about how much you care about them. It's how much you act to care about them, or express it, or identify it. But giving orders or not giving orders, listening or not listening, aligning the team, inspiring people, whatever it is, all these things happen through words. Now, here's the problem. The language changes with time, and it changes slowly. But the problem now is work has changed faster than language changes typically. So work is in front of language. And work has changed from an industrial age structure to a knowledge-based structure. So even if you're a dentist and you're drilling cavities, there's, of course, a physical aspect to the work. But a lot of the work is in the decisions that you make.
Yes.
Is this a cavity? Should we drill it? Should we wait? Should we take another x-ray? All these kind of things. So it's about thinking. And not just you, but everyone. The assistants, the hygienists, the front office, everybody. So the language we use at work is the language from an industrial age organization. It's the same language that Nelson Rockefeller or Andrew Carnegie, the big industrialists here in the United States, used. And it's a language of coercion, because in the industrial age, we had bosses who told the rank and file workers what to do. They were illiterate. They were not unintelligent, but they probably didn't know how to read 100 years ago. So unless you've deliberately chosen your language, those are the words that you say. And I hear it. For example, here's a silly example. I went to a software company and they had an all hands meeting. Well, all hands is because it's a Navy term. Everyone, we need all hands. That's why I hired you. It's for your hands, it's for your physical strength and dexterity to do things.
Yep.
But software companies don't hire people for their hands. They hire them for their heads.
Yeah.
Or maybe their hearts, but we don't have all heads meeting. So this is vestige that's lingering on. We talk about, we use more perniciously, we use a kind of a binary deterministic language, which is about reducing variability. Are you sure? We good? Does that make sense? All these things are premature reductions of variability. What you want is to say, how could that be wrong? Or how sure are you? And you want to run meetings in ways that make it easy for people who have different thinking to express it, and for the rest of the group to be curious about it. And I guarantee you, if I went and let's say I had five tables of five dentists, and I asked them a question, hey, at your table, come up with the answer to some question, how many countries are in Africa or something. What would happen is someone would say a number. Well, I think there are 50. What do you think? And oh, no, it's 48. No, it's 52. And they kind of argue like this. This is the wrong way to run a meeting. This is about reducing variability. What you want to do is let everyone vote. Okay, everyone, before you contaminate you with what anyone thinks, anchor the group with what anyone thinks, write down what everyone, and then everyone flips their card. And then we look at the high and the low. We invite those people to speak. Mm. But I've done this at least 100 times. Only one group has done it that way.
Wow.
And then when I asked them afterwards, why did you run the meeting the way you ran it? And they're like, well, no, look, we came up with this answer. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the structure of the meeting, the structure of how the group came to that number. What? Oh, well, I don't, no one has an answer, because they're just programmed. We're just robots who are programmed by this old language, and just language is original coding. So we're programmed just like a computer, and we just run on this. And I push a button and I'm going to get an output. If I go up to someone, a random person on an airplane flight, and I say, hey, I don't think your bag's going to fit in the overhead. What do you think? Do you think they're going to say, oh, yeah, tell me more about that. Do you think they're going to say that?
Nah.
No. No.
Nah.
Because we're programmed to respond, react, reply. That's how we're going to respond. And it's so clear to me now that I've started thinking about it this way. And I just see these programmed, I see it in myself all the time. Mm. These programmed reactions. Break free of your programming, ladies and gentlemen. Choose your words. You are programmed by your language and the language is controlling you. If you say the word they, it means that's not, person's not in my tribe and I should be skeptical of trusting them. And I compete with they. I collaborate with we and I trust we. So what you want to do is, if I were running a dental practice of 20 people, I'd say, look, everybody here, you have to refer to everybody as we. Oh, no. So in other words, if the dentist or the owners make a decision, I'm going to refer to them as we, and I'm at the front. Oh, and I in the back, I don't refer to the people at the front desk as, oh, well, they, or I have a marketing person. Well, they did. No, it's all, we're all we. And I can tell right away in an organization, well, they did this. I'm like, well, who's they? You work here.
Yeah.
No. Well, they...
It drives me crazy. But that's the thing, is that subtle shift of language, it's not even subtle, it's a really important shift in language, creates a totally different culture. Hey, David, you've been really, really, really generous with your time. And I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your insights and your wisdom. Ladies and gents, please do get the books. Turn the Ship Around, Leadership is Language. They will change your life. They've certainly changed my thoughts, my approach to leadership. Yeah, I've studied leadership for a lot of years, and I can tell you it was a really interesting paradigm switch for me, really deep insights. And the thing that I really like about what you're talking about, David, is there's a lot of depth here. We're not just talking about, you know, hand it off and kind of let it all hang loose, Mother Goose. We're talking about really deep engagement with people and bringing the best out of people. And I really, really appreciate that.
Thanks.
David, you're going to be speaking to our boardroom group in a couple of months. And I can't wait for that. And I know they can't wait for that. So I'm looking forward to picking up this conversation, because I feel like there's about 3 years worth of conversation that I'm trying to fit into a short podcast. But thank you so much, and hopefully we can do this again.
Love to. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.